And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't know how to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, national reporter at The Athletic, here as always with Fred Katz on the East Coast, Anthony Slater on the West Coast. Gentlemen, I'm skipping right over you today because we have a special guest, a friend of mine that I'm very excited to have on the pod, Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe. G. Wash, before you jump in, it hit me today, my friend, you know, national writer at the Boston Globe, long profile that we got to get through, UC Berkeley grad, author of the Spencer Haywood Rule with Mark Spears of ESPN. Definitely go buy that. Fantastic job on that book. But in the here and the now, Gary, you are in our media circles known as one of the few folks who are out there living the road life during a pandemic. You have been traveling with the Celtics for quite some time now. And the part that, as if that wasn't interesting enough, the part that hit me this morning that I was somehow slow to just kind of have land was, damn, Gary, you did 3 months in the bubble, man. And then you hit the road like this. You're getting cobwebs back at your house in Boston. Like, what is life like for you right now, my friend?
Actually, it's not bad. It's been fine. It's just hard for me to cover games on TV. When I'm tweeting at games, there are people who follow me who are literally 6 to 7 plays behind. So sure. So everybody's jumping me for spoiling, Tatum hits a three to tie the game, and they're looking, and the Celtics are down 5.
Right.
So it's like, I'm sorry, what do you want me to do? I'm here. So I just couldn't do the TV thing. I really couldn't do the slowness. You can't see much. Like, it's just too much of a controlled environment. So as long as it was safe and everything seems to be, some of the arenas are different experiences than others, it's been fine. Like, Slater would tell you, I went to Golden State, man, like, they tested you, which was a kind of a nervous, like, man, if I'm in California, I test positive. Like, I'm here for 2 weeks. Like, they're going to quarantine me. The Warriors are going to wrap me out. I'm going to be at the Courtyard, Emeryville, for like 2 weeks, just sitting there waiting. So luckily I was negative. And, and there's other places that are just like, come right on in. Here's your temperature. Go to your seat.
Right.
And then you never see or hear a PR person again.
Right.
Or they give you a little box, bag lunch, like you're, 12, with an apple and a cookie and a sandwich and a bag of chips.
Right.
It's amusing.
He mentioned it. There are those nervous moments at the Warriors games where you're like, 5 seconds away from getting your result and you're like, I'm about to go in the game. But there's also my next 2 weeks could be very different if this lady tells me something very different right now.
Well,
so,
it's a good week to have Gary on. It's always a good week to have Gary on, but we got trade deadline season, gentlemen. And so we're going to talk about Gary's road travels. We're going to talk about the league and what the heck is going on in the 6 degrees of Boston Celtics component to this trade deadline season. Because Gary, at last, you know, count for me, you know, if I believe everything I read and if I believe everything I write, the Celtics are about to have like 27 new players by the end of the week.
Yeah, they're always in something. They don't do much.
Right.
Yeah,
it's so, always something. You know, I certainly want to hit on that. But I'm going to keep it, you know, on the kind of the wavelength you were hitting on there. We see you here on Zoom. You're in Memphis right now. Memphis, you were in Orlando last. Is it? Do I have that right?
Where was I at? I was in Cleveland on Wednesday. Yeah.
Okay. Weren't you to Orlando recently though, right? I read a Magic story. Did
no,
I not?
Yeah, well, they played Orlando yesterday in Boston.
Oh, that was in Boston. I'm sorry. Yeah, I had that wrong. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. But I mean, give us the kind of the breakdown. You already hit on some of the color from the road, but the main question I was hoping you could hit on is going into the year, you know, none of us knew what to expect from an access standpoint. How are we going to cover this league remotely, and some of the frustrations that you talked about. Although, by the way, I think you just confirmed that you probably have like 15,000 scoops this season because you're actually scooping plays before people actually see them. Yeah. I mean, your breaking news game is off the charts right now. But just why? Why did you, other than the discomfort that comes with covering stuff remotely, what was your thought process in terms of deciding to hit the road? And you know, it seems like you're pretty happy with the choice. How has it gone?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, Sam, from the bubble, I mean, our perspective there was like unlike any other. I mean, hearing the players argue with each other, yell at the refs. Remember that instance where Rondo's brother was talking mess to Westbrook?
Yeah.
Westbrook's like, whose man is this?
Shoot, I chased his brother out of the arena that night and talked to him.
That was gold. That was gold. Right. And as far as I felt like you could get a perspective that you couldn't get just what you just can't get watching TV. It's just, you just can't.
Right.
You could see guys like coming off the bench with injuries. There's all that space behind the bench now. So you can see guys, you know, working out injuries, walking around, yelling at their teammates to, you know, get a stop. Like the perspective that you have being there, especially with no fans, is just, it's priceless. And I think that's, I just took that from the bubble, that all the stuff that we took from there, all the things, and obviously with the crowd noise, I don't know if you were there when before the crowd noise, when it was like a library in those arenas where you could hear everything, the shoes.
No, it was loud by the time I got there. And just to give people that context, Gary did, one of the few who did the entire bubble. So I was there for the second half. I mean, how long was that list? It was Chris Haynes, Mark Spears. Who am I forgetting?
Sean Powell was there when I got Sean Powell, but he left like unfortunately replaced by the late Sekou Smith for like the last month.
My dear friend.
But Powell was there for like the first 2 months. Tanya Ganguly was there for a good, there were people who split it. But I think Haynes was there longer, like Taylor Rooks. There were people who were there pretty much, I think some people hit 100 days.
Right. I mean, and you make a good point that I could see, you know, especially, listen, by the time we got to the end of the bubble, you felt somewhat spoiled professionally because everybody else who does what we do didn't get a taste of that. And so I could see that carrying over to this season. Now, I'll be honest, I went a different way. I kind of went in lockdown mode. I haven't been to a game in person since then. So it's wild to see your
Sam, don't you live in Sacramento though? I mean, is it?
I do.
Okay,
I do.
So, it's a king. So it's not like you're going to watch high quality basketball on a consistent basis in hometown. But,
and Marvin Bagley's dad is going to come for you right now, Gary.
No, he's going to agree with him, I think.
He's going to demand another trade. I understand people's resistance and understand the health issues. I just kind of felt like if it was safe, and most of the teams have made it really safe to the point where I said you make contact with no one. I mean, I went to San Antonio, and they put us – it was like two other guys. It was three of us, and we were like – you know, all the arenas now have these, like, cigar bars, restaurants way up. I don't even say the 300 section, like the 400 section.
Right. But
they put us right in front of there, so literally the players look like ants. And I did not see a person from the Spurs at all.
Oh, wow.
Like, they just, like, have at it, cover the game.
Wow.
New Orleans, we were knocking on the wall of the top of the – I was three rows from the very top. So some places are not accommodating. Others, are the seats are fine.
What's been the best setup so far?
Oh, boy. Staples Center wasn't bad. I didn't go to Philly. I heard Philly was very good. Most of the seats are pretty much where they sat as before, you know, because obviously 8-9 years ago, they moved us from the floor and moved us from even close to the floor to sell our seats because we're just media and who cares about us.
Right.
So they moved us to like to the first deck. The Warriors were great. I mean, you know, Raymond Ritter and those guys, I mean, they ask if you need anything. They got a person serving water. Other places, you can't drink during games. It's like, okay, I'm supposed to, like, dehydrate myself.
Right.
You know, hey, what's going on here? So, yeah, most of the arenas are solid. You know, but there are arenas that are sitting us literally like, you know, the Bob Uecker seats. You know, Google that reference if you don't know it.
Warrior seats are actually better than their normal ones. When fans come back in, yeah, they get booted to the corner and up.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah. I was like, we're in a luxury, but it was nice.
So, there was even some initial talk about putting us down in those bunker suites that are, but yeah, they realized they could get some high quality patrons in there and sneak them in. So,
yeah.
All right, guys, let's, I'm going to pivot real quick. Let's dive into the stuff that folks can never get enough of. But Gary, feel free the entire visit here to hit the pause button and share any tales from the road that come to mind, because I'm endlessly fascinated by that. But on the trade front, give me your macro view of, you know, what this week might entail. We don't have big time names. James Harden already got moved. Bradley Beal's not going anywhere. You know, even guys like Nikola Vucevic, I don't think Vuce is going anywhere. But I think there's some interesting kind of, you know, B minus B names that are going to get moved. The Victor Oladipos of the world, Aaron Gordon could get moved. I think John Collins very possibly might not get moved. But, you know, there's a long list. But the Celtics, because they have that $28.5 million trade exception from the Gordon Hayward sign and trade, they've just been connected to everything. I've written about the Barnes stuff. We wrote about the Gordon stuff a little bit today. I think you mentioned a Cleveland situation with Torian Prince and Larry Nance possibilities. You know, but you kind of alluded to it. Danny Ainge has become, you know, known as the guy that has his fingers in everything and doesn't actually pull the trigger. So, you know, what help us separate fact from fiction here. What do you think the Celtics week is going to look like?
It's interesting, Sam. It all depends on how they view themselves. I mean, they're 21-21. They're a game and a half behind Atlanta. Believe it or not, Atlanta is now the fourth seed. It shows you how bad the East has been, or mediocre, I should say. So the fourth seed is very attainable. I think the top three seeds, you know, pick a team, Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, I think they're locks for the top three. So now Miami, Indiana, the Knicks, the Celtics are all fighting for four in a first-round playoff home court advantage. So I think Danny wants to wait till the summer to use this trade exception, but I think there's like kind of pressure to improve this team because you have two emerging superstars in Tatum and Brown, two all-stars, and pretty much an aging kind of like not as effective Kemba Walker, Marcus Smart. Like they need help. And does Danny just tell the fans, hey, I don't think this team's good enough. I'm just going to let us, you know, get eliminated in the first round or maybe have a shot to win a first round series and get stomped by Milwaukee or Brooklyn and then just keep it moving and then do something in the summer. So I think it will tell the fans exactly what Ainge thinks of this team. I do think they'll make a move because they need help. I mean, their bench is just, it's pathetic at this point. I mean, they're running rookies out there. You know, they're relying a lot on guys like Semi Ojeleye, guys who are serviceable, solid guys, but on a good team, they're the 11th or 12th man, Grant Williams. So they've got to do something. I think the Aaron Gordon thing makes a lot of sense. I think Aaron Gordon's the type of player that, okay, like it's out the window. He's never going to be a megastar. Like I think he came into the league thinking he was going to be, he was just going to catapult and he was just going to be dunking on everybody. He was going to be Blake Griffin part two. It hasn't happened. But I think you put Aaron Gordon in a good environment with winning players, with a winning environment, with good players, he'll definitely improve. Because I watched him yesterday. He's got skills, but God, he's got no discipline. The Magic just firing shots up. I mean, they're just out there going through the motions at this point. It's just typical Orlando. So I think Gord's a guy they should target. Now, it all depends on what the Magic want to do and whether he's already requested a trade. Do they want to move on? Are they going to demand a first-round pick for Gordon? And what else do the Magic want? I don't think they need any of the other young players. I mean, they got Isaac. They got Bamba. They got, Cole Anthony. They got Markelle Fultz. Like, they've got a slew of, like, former draft picks. They need veteran, but so do they want a first rounder? It's going to be interesting to see what teams kind of balk over the next 3 days and finally just decide to make a deal.
I mean, Gary, one of the things that I'm really curious about with them is last year they were so good defensively, and I know Marcus Smart has missed half the season, and I think of him as the defender what everybody else does. He's excellent. When you lose Marcus Smart, your defense is going to get worse. But they've really fallen off a cliff. And when he's out there, the numbers say they haven't, hasn't made the difference in making them, an elite. They were top five defense last year, and they just have fallen into kind of a mediocre territory. I look at them and I kind of think they have a bunch of things to shore up, but I would imagine they would want some defensive reinforcements if they're trying to get better this year. What are they prioritizing though? Like when they look at the market and they think, okay, we got the big trade exception, even though they're constantly in talks for, well, are they going to get Paul George? And then they never actually get Paul George. Right. And Aaron Gordon feels like that to me, but the big names aside, I mean, what actual basketball traits, even if they were to just kind of get a role player, are they prioritizing right now?
I think they'd like another 3-and-D guy. Like they need there's like a JJ Redick's out there, right? There was talk there, but JJ doesn't defend. He's old, but he can shoot. So they'd like to get a guy who's young, who can shoot, maybe not as good as JJ, but who can shoot, spread the floor, and also defend. They need to get another athlete on the floor. They depend too heavily. Brown is a good defender, but he sometimes takes too many chances with steals. He sometimes falls asleep, a.k.a. the OG Anunoby play in the bubble where he just turned his head and got screened by Gasol, and then that changed the entire series. Like, there's little things Jalen does that's like he falls asleep. Tatum is a good defender when he wants to be. Tristan is solid. Tice, but Tice gets too many fouls. This team fouls too damn much, first of all. Like, every quarter, the other team's in the bonus with 8 minutes left. It's like, my goodness, like, they don't know how to not foul. So they need a young 3-and-D guy. I thought Prince would be perfect. He's not playing in Cleveland. They're kind of soured on him. He had good years in Brooklyn. In Atlanta. Then he was kind of a good compliment in Brooklyn before he got thrown into the Harden deal. So I think that's someone they should target. They just need another active body. They need help. When Tatum and Brown go out of the game, they need to be able to compete. And that's not – and I think that – and then you've got this whole kind of point guard with Kemba Walker where if Kemba doesn't hit shots, he's sort of useless on the floor because he's not going to rack up the assists and he's not going to – like, he's got to hit shots. If he's not a shot maker – then there's no reason to have Kemba Walker on the floor. And so far this season, he hasn't been a shot maker. So that leaves a hole, and then defensively teams go right at him, the pick and rolls. So this team has a lot of issues, but I think a 3-and-D guy, a moderate salary, they're not going to use the whole 28.5. They're not going to get, they can't fit into, let's say, an Andre Drummond. Gordon or Prince are the two guys I think they need to go after. And I think Danny – there's a pressure in Boston. There's a lot more additions to the Brad Stevens needs to go fan club. There's that horde is starting to grow. Okay. And there's a complacency that Danny, as a lot of people say, is way leaning too much on the 08 title. It's like, Danny, it's 12 years, 13 years now, do something else. is kind of what fans are saying in Boston. Like, that's great. We love Paul. Paul's on TV. Kevin's selling vodka. And Ray is like, you know, Ray's posting Instagrams from like excursions on, you know, in Mazablan or something. So like, that's over. And Perk's on TV, you know, Perk's the superstar. So like, do something else. That's a long time ago. So I do think there's an inherent pressure on Danny to do something to improve this team, because at this point, they're a first round elimination waiting to happen.
Rajon Rondo, he's available. They can go relive it a little bit. Sam, you had some reporting kind of on Orlando. Like, how, you know, how available is Gordon?
It's interesting. I just talked to, I mean, it's safe enough to share. I was chatting with our buddy Jeff Zilgit from USA Today just a few minutes before jumping on the pod, and we were talking about the Magic, because Jeff had tweeted something essentially saying that, you know, yes, Aaron Gordon wants a new team, but the Magic, you know, are just definitely putting their heels in terms of wanting something in return for the guy that they drafted fourth overall quite some time ago. Never mind that it wasn't from this front office with Jeff Weltman and John Hammond, but it sounds like there's an ownership component where they're just having a real hard time wrapping their head around the idea that you would move a guy like Aaron Gordon without some real substance in return. So what I thought was funny is that, all right, you're going to dig in on that front, and the guy that you might not be able to get what you want and Gordon, so maybe he stays, even though he's clearly looking for a new challenge in a new city and a new team. But meanwhile, with Vucevic, the guy who you definitely could get something good right now, you're going to play the other side of that card and say, well, we believe so much in him that we're not going to move him. I mean, they could get a nice package from the Celtics, from a lot of other teams for Vuce. So, you know, it's like, I think that a scenario does exist where the Magic come out of the backside of the deadline, you know, with both guys still in Magic jerseys. The Gordon market is interesting because there's a lot of interest, but I just don't think teams are, you know, they're not showing the kind of enthusiasm that Orlando would like them to. Portland is definitely in the mix. Denver's certainly in the mix. But like with Denver, to highlight one of the possibilities, you just kind of hear that with them, you know, they're not really eager at all to put any of their young talent on the table in order to get him. And so I don't know if that ends up happening. The Houston thing, and Chris Haynes reported this today, was very, very real. And it does, you know, and I heard the same thing, that sounds like Aaron and his kind of pushback on the Rockets front had a lot to do with that deal not happening, because they were hoping to have him do an extension on his way in. And, you know, he wants to be in a competitive environment. So for me, what's interesting, I mean, Aaron's not in charge, obviously. It's a trade situation. But you guys know that this is there's a gray area where there's a lot of feeling out between the player and some of the possible teams. And he's sending some mixed signals to some teams where it's kind of like, all right, you've told the team that you want out, but you seem real hesitant with quite a few of the different possibilities. And I feel like right now that's what they're navigating through. And we'll see in the end if something actually goes down.
Well, you know what's so weird about the Gordon trade market? And I'm just going off your reporting. Like, you just named a bunch of them. Houston, Minnesota, Denver, Portland. Normally when a player becomes available like that, and I know Gordon's 25, so it's not like he's some, you know, rental who's, you know, 30 something and, you know, is only valuable to a contending team. But normally when a guy of that caliber and up becomes available, there's some amount of consistency between the market for those guys. You can kind of find a common denominator between the teams. And the Aaron Gordon market, it just seems like all those teams are going in completely different directions, right? I mean, Houston has lost a million in a row, and Steven Silas looks like he's losing his mind in postgame press conferences, and Minnesota has the worst record in the league, and Denver's trying to win a title, and Portland is trying to stay afloat with injuries. It's like we're covering every single team style that you could possibly have. And, you know, Gordon, meanwhile, has a year and a half left on his deal, and you know, an extension with Houston makes more sense in a situation like that, where a team at that point in the standings is trying to trade for that guy. But that market is just, it's very strange. Normally there's some consistency between those teams, and those teams are all in such different spots.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Well, the Minnesota one, I mean, we could cherry pick a few different possibilities. The Minnesota one is interesting, and I don't get the sense as of recording this on Monday that they're on the short list. But, you know, okay, they're dropping games and they're getting used to Chris Finch and it's a new transition time for them. But as someone had kind of said to me yesterday, listen, you're talking about Carl Anthony Towns, you know, Anthony Edwards, possibly Anthony Slater's favorite player, Cade Cunningham, coming the Timberwolves way. Gary, before we got on the air, Oklahoma State alum Anthony Slater here was just casting aspersions on Cunningham. And
that is that is the over exaggeration. I'm wearing the Oklahoma State sweatshirt, but I'm still a little stung from the loss.
I knew you'd back down. I get on the air and you're walking it back. But no,
I mean,
like,
if we
want to
have a draft, I feel like we could have a draft podcast down the line, but
that's all right. He'll go number two after Buddy Boeheim gets picked number one. It's fine.
But then, yeah, you're not subjective at all, buddy. No, but yeah, like that, Minnesota's interesting because they could be popping if Edwards keeps, you know, going in the right direction like he is. And but I don't know where he's going to land. The other thing that, welcome to trade season where we are all guilty of forgetting, you know, how good or not good some of these guys are. No disrespect to Aaron. He you know, a couple of years ago, he was looking like a guy who might push for an all-star team. And I mean, Aaron's a good player, but he's been seemingly plateaued in Orlando for quite some time. I'm not convinced that, you know, he's going to land on any of these teams and be the kind of impact player that they're hoping that he would be. And I think that's bearing out in some of the offers that we're hearing about.
I think it's interesting here is that there's just so many like treadmill teams here, like mismanaged teams, like the teams who have players that teams want. Sacramento, with no idea what the Kings are going to do. Right? Is Harrison Barnes on the block? Is Marvin Bagley on the block? They don't take any step forward. Same with Orlando. Like, they're just too – and Charlotte was in that till they, you know, got drafted LaMelo and then, you know, spent $5 billion on Gordon Hayward. But, like, it's like these treadmill teams, it's a testament to how mismanaged some of these teams are, regardless of who's managing them.
Right.
Like the Kings have had lottery picks for the last 15 years and haven't made the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, they've got the stock, you know, like Thomas Robinson, Tyreek Evans, like, let's keep going down the line.
Rookie of the year, Tyreek Evans.
Yeah. 25-5. He beat Steph. Although I voted for Steph that year. But like Orlando, Mo Bamba, Jonathan Isaac. I mean, like, they've got these Oladipo, they gave away for Serge Ibaka. Like, you're just talking about, like, bad managed, poorly managed teams. And we're looking at these teams and saying, what the hell are they going to do before the trade deadline? We have no clue. Is Orlando going to move? Is the DeVos family like, no, we want that 10th spot. They're 4.5 back. That's what adds no clarity into anything, right? is the 10th spot, because there's teams like Washington, Orlando, in the West, you know, Memphis, who are like, hey, we got to get that 10th spot. So, you know, and it's just like, because that's playoff money they've lost from having no fans. So, like, it's a DeVos family telling Steve Clifford, go for it? Or are they going to do a fire sale? I also think Terrence Ross is a player who should be way marketable. I think he's another Orlando Magic player who, in the right situation, – would be a tremendous pickup for a winning team with a winning culture. Not, hey, Terrence, go out there and just shoot to your heart's content and there'll be no discipline. Like, I think he would be another valuable pickup for a team. But what's Weltman going to do in Orlando? We have no clue.
I like Terrence Ross as like a six-man type. He's got a decreasing – his contract is decreasing in salary too, so it's a little more appealing to a team as well. He's they like Terrence Ross though. Like also, Gary, you get at you know, ownership groups that are you know, wanting to go for the 10 seed, which is a ridiculous term. I hate saying the 10 seed. Which, by the way,
it's a good life motto. Just go for the 10th seed.
I don't know anything about that, covering the Washington Wizards, by the way. I'm totally unfamiliar with that organizational mentality.
Warriors are locked into the 9 right now. We're all covering those type of teams.
Exactly. It's just, I mean, I think the play-in tournament has totally changed it as well, which is the point.
I think the combination, Fred, of the play-in tournament and the economics that Gary alluded to are a powerful combo, because owners are looking at it like, if you just look at it from a real life standpoint, like, oh man, I just lost a bunch of cash this year. How can I get some of it back? And they're looking with the short-term view. And then the flattening out of the lottery odds, I think, is scaring owners more than it does front offices, because you feel like front offices are still looking at like a soft tank type of approach. And I thought that's what the Kings were going to do. You know, Gary, you kind of hinted at them. And then next thing you know, it was, nope, we're pushing it. We're going for it. We're going to hold on to Barnes pretty tight. You know, Bagley's a different story. I meant to report it today, but for good fodder on the pod, I'll share that as far as Bagley goes, the Kings had expressed interest in John Collins in a Collins-Bagley deal. I mean, that's not happening, but, you know, interesting to give you a sense of where their heads are at. But, yeah, I think the owners are a lot of them are panicking. You know, I wrote that the Kings had lost $100 million, I mean, during the pandemic. It might not be the prudent thing to do to let that affect your strategy in the kind of way that's going to have long-term impact. But a part of me does get it, but it's making for a really really muddied kind of trade deadline season.
Right. And the Kings are not the only one. Yeah. I mean, the Wizards, you know, Monumental Sports and Entertainment, who owns the Wizards, Ted Leonsis' company, has furloughed or laid off 40% of their employees, 232 out of about 600 employees during the fall. So like there are so many ownership groups that are wanting that money. I always wonder how they really weigh how much a high lottery pick could bring in future revenue.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's short-term, you know, thinking, especially exactly this year where it's like, okay, you get in the playoffs, you get in the play-in, let's say. There's a chance you get one game. Is it even at home? I mean, you might not even get a home game, number one. Okay, you sneak into the first round. You're probably getting waxed. Let's say you have two home games in the first round. Are fans going to even be at these home games? You know, 2,000 fans, let's say, are there to watch you lose. Whereas if we talk about getting money, you know, get yourself the best lottery odds in a draft that draft experts say 5 potential franchise changers at the top. Like, I know
Slater says four because Cunningham's not on the list.
I did not say he's not a franchise changer. I just was a little disappointed in the end of his season. That's all. But my point is, like, it's short term thinking. And the funny thing is, the teams that I think were smarter about it, the Thunder, for example, Andrew's Thunder, are winning too much this season, even though they're trying to sell off. Whereas the team with the worst record in the league right now, Minnesota, is really trying to win because their first round pick, top three protected, is owed to the Warriors. It's been odd. I think Houston, as bad as it seems right there for Steven Silas, like, they're going the correct direction. I think you should be wanting to lose this many straight games, even though it's obviously
it didn't look that way on that Zoom call yesterday.
I'm not saying like it's got to be tough for him, but I just mean organizationally, if I'm Houston, like, don't try to get the 10 seed. Try to get Cade Cunningham or, you know, Jalen Suggs if you prefer that or one of the other guys.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Houston one, I don't know if you guys have any intel or insight on this one. If you talk about the, you know, just the best names that might be on the move this season, again, it's kind of the second and third tier type players. Oladipo is a guy that you know, we're talking about a lot. And Victor Oladipo, the name, I think, is still higher profile and better than what he is on the court right now. But there, you know, he's young enough that teams still think he can get it together. You know, the health has finally come around for him. You always hear the Knicks tied to Oladipo. You always hear Miami tied to Oladipo. So for the Rockets, it's like that ship has unofficially sailed with him being a free agent this summer. You know, and he's certainly a guy that could be on the move. What do you think might lie ahead for him next couple of days?
I think he's got to be, if I'm Houston, like I saw them last week, and they just, like, I feel bad for Steven Seitz. I think everybody does, because they got John Wall to team with potentially Harden and DeMarcus Cousins to try to, like, make the playoffs, right?
Right.
Then Boogie gets waived. Harden asks for get the hell out of there. So now you've got $47 million Wall and, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. in the backcourt. Like, so they're trying to nurture Porter to be the point guard. But you've got John Wall there, who's now healthy. Then you've got Oladipo, who's like, F it, man. Like, I'm trying to up my numbers because I'm trying to get traded because I want max this summer. Right. So they are a team on 10 different agendas. Are they trying to lose? Which I think I agree with Fred. Like, I would try to lose. Like, try to get Cunningham. Maybe not Anthony, might not take him. Or Suggs.
I'm being painted as a Cunningham hater, and I'm gonna.
If you want Luca Garza, if you want whoever, the kid out of SC Mobley, whatever you want, like, get another. But it's like you've got Wall on an agenda, and who makes too much money to move. Oladipo's trying to get the hell out of there. They're trying to nurture kids, and they're playing a bunch of just guys, and then you got Christian Wood. Like, it's a mess there, and so. If I'm management, you got to move Oladipo somewhere to get something for him because he's not coming back. So you made this Harden deal to get a bunch of picks. You've got to try to make it worth your while.
I got a text.
Gary, I have a question. Sam, I wish I could. Go for it.
It's not inside. It's attempted comedy. I forget who sent it to me, so I feel bad not giving credit where credit's due. Somebody texted me yesterday. And said, we got to get Kelly Eco the hell out of Houston. He's the last man standing, you know, famed Rockets beat writer who has, you know, gone from covering a title contender to a 20 game losing streak. But Fred, go ahead. You were going to jump in.
No, I was going to say, we all know how the NBA works. We all know how this podcast works. My internet cuts out.
Gary, Fred's only good for one Wi-Fi glitch. Per pod, and there it is. All right, commence.
I'm nothing if not consistent. The way the league works is you do your intel before you trade for a guy. Is this an intel fail on Houston? Trading for a guy who was on the last year of his deal, who is going to command however much we think he's going to get, whether it's a max or less than a max.
I think they kind of tried to gloss over what their intent was when they did the trade. Honestly, I mean, they had a chance to get Caris LeVert, and who had multiple years on his deal, and you know, you could certainly argue is as good, if not better, player right now.
You know, and, who else they had a chance to get? Ben Simmons. And it's clear, right. You know, think about what it's clear that there's such a long term project of a rebuild there, because right.
There's a lot of noise about. I mean, it's not just noise. I mean, there's certainly the idea that Tillman Fertitta wasn't real excited about, you know, doing a deal with Daryl Morey. And so that might have played a part. But for sure, I do think they right. Well, yeah. I think with Oladipo, because when you would ask the questions about Oladipo and where he fit into the Rockets' plan after that trade, there was a lot of hedging. You know what I mean? So I get your question for sure, Fred. I actually think that out of respect for Victor, they've tried to split the difference and not really let that narrative, you know, grow that we didn't really plan on him being part of this.
They're asking for too much, too. It's similar maybe to the Orlando Gordon situation, and probably worse because right now Aaron Gordon, to me, is a more appealing player at that salary number, and he's under contract next season. It de-escalates down to like $16 million.
Right.
But Houston's just asking too much for Oladipo, and I think teams are just waiting for it to get closer to the deadline because, as we all are agreeing, like they kind of have to move off of him. They're the one that's more pressurized than some of these other teams. So I assume the price tag will go down, and if it does it go down to a point that some team pulls the trigger?
Right. Slater, before we get down the backstretch here and let, you know, Gary go sightsee in Memphis and do what you do on NBA road trips, I'm just jealous, man. I look at your background. I haven't seen a hotel in a long time. I don't know what that's like anymore. But Slater, Warriors talk. We talked offline a little bit about how the Warriors, and we reported this today, that, you know, they'd shown interest in Bogdan Bogdanovic. Kind of gives you a sense of where their heads are at, what type of player they would love to get their hands on. And that package, that was a Kelly Oubre thing. You hear Oubre's name out there a lot. You know, what do you think lies ahead for them?
Well, he's the name they have to decide on right now. Everything else, you know, they're not pushing for a title run this season. They're not rebuilding because they want to be a title contender next season with Klay Thompson's back. But they need to decide on Oubre before the deadline because he's an unrestricted free agent. He can walk, and because they're so cap strapped elsewhere, that $14 million right now that they're giving Oubre, if he leaves, they can't just obviously turn and flip that elsewhere. Now they can try to do what Boston did, maybe get a trade exception and a sign and trade or something like that. But before the deadline, they are canvassing the entire league for people in that salary bracket, which includes Oladipo. They've sniffed around on him for sure. The price tag has just been too high from Houston.
What's your sense of the price tag?
You know, everyone really is appeal, you know, is interest. Anyone that talks to the Warriors always wants to mention this Minnesota pick because it's top three protected. Minnesota is currently the worst team in the league. There's a chance right now, if the season ended, Minnesota is the worst team in basketball, there's a 60% chance that's either the fourth or fifth pick in a draft that people say, like I said, five potential franchise changer. So there's a 60% chance you could get one of those five guys if Minnesota has the worst record. So teams, it's a little bit like what Boston dealt with when, you know, they had all those great picks and young assets, where if a team's calling you for you, they're not going to ask about your, you know, secondary, third assets. They want to ask about all the sparkling ones. Wiseman in the Minnesota pick. Now, the reality is the Warriors, unless it's Bradley Beal or something like that on the table, they're not putting either of those assets in a discussion. But I think for the right guy, they'd be willing to throw one of their future first in with Kelly Oubre, who's a good player. Like when we talk about Atlanta, Bogdan Bogdanovic, you know, if Bogdanovic and Oubre flip homes right now, I'm not sure like Atlanta's necessarily like worse this season. I don't know that, you know, hurts their playoff chase that they're clearly prioritizing. Like Oubre is a helpful rotation piece. The appeal for the Warriors is, you know, for this theoretical deal we're talking, Bogdanovic, you bring him in, he's making $18 million the next three seasons beyond this. That's price control for them, and they know going into the summer that they have that salary slot locked in. Compared to with Oubre, they don't know if they want to commit that future salary slot to Oubre yet, and they also don't know if he wants to commit to them, and that's just what they're deciding. To me, this week is about his salary slot for the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be interesting to watch. I, you know, on the Hawks side of that, I don't know how to read the room in terms of Bogdanovic because, you know, he missed 25 games with a knee injury, had a really good game the other night against the Thunder, I think 23-6-3. And, you know, Nate McMillan has been doing some different things in contrast to Lloyd Pierce to try to get Bogdan involved. So they're not down on him. He's one of those gray area guys where they're listening because, you know, let's not kid ourselves. 95% of the league is, you know, not good enough to where, you know, teams listen on everybody. So we'll see what happens there. Gary, I need a few more stories, brother, from, you know, this weird world that you're living in. You know, I don't know exactly how to throw it to you other than like, you know, has, you know, give me a top three kind of highlights or lowlights or things when you've been on the road, just kind of laughing to yourself, like, man, what did I get myself into? Or things maybe you saw that you never would have seen if you didn't make this choice. Because I mean, just to make sure the listeners understand it, 99% of the NBA media industry, if not more, is still doing things remotely. And, you know, and so you're out there, you know, even you casually mentioned a second ago, you know, oh, I just saw the Rockets. Like, we used to say those things. We don't say them anymore because that means you saw them in person. But, you know, give us a taste of it.
Yeah, just like, I mean, it's easy. I mean, stuff, no one knows where you're supposed to sit. So you go in and you just get this number and like you ask the usher or ask the person credential and they're like, you know, because they're not used to dealing with the media anymore. You go to a city and you're like, okay, does the team know I'm here? Because usually when you go into a city, you get the welcome to Memphis, welcome to Chicago. This is where you enter the arena. Like, and I'm just like emailing, hey, do you know that there's someone here covering the game? And then you could just see them probably on their phone like, okay, hold on. Let me put together this like little obligatory email. I haven't done this all season because there's nobody traveling. It's just interesting. Like Phoenix, I was there for the first game where they had fans. That was a little awkward. Like you're just trying to not be close to anyone. But it was like first responders and their families. So I think that was pretty awesome. It's pretty like the whole thing, like the lunch, you know, or the little, here's a box lunch with, and it's like, it's kid stuff, you know,
right.
A cookie.
Is it like a Transformer lunch pail?
Yeah, you get something exactly. Like that? You get a little toy. It's just like, what the hell? And you know, but you can't eat at your seat. So you got to eat in this little designed area. It's just like, I just think the NBA teams are on total scramble mode with how to deal with this.
And are you in the bubble? One of my favorite things. And man, you talk about that environment being static and repetitive and, you know, Groundhog Day. It really was. And so one of the things I learned quickly in my bubble stay is I would look out my window from my little casita room. And about the time I was waking up in the morning, because I'd be guilty of sleeping in, I would see Gary Washburn finishing his morning run, sweating like a dog and working your ass off. But, you know, you were diligent about it. You still doing the road run in this environment?
Or you try to find, you know, the hotel gyms are kind of a crapshoot. Some are closed, some are open. In Dallas, I found a trail to run. It's sort of like you just got to kind of wing it at the, the times. Like, but honestly, it's been, I think, a good experience. I've gotten to see a lot of things I probably wouldn't have seen on TV because I've done some of the TV stuff at times. And I think it's a good experience, but obviously the safety thing, I understand. We'll see what happens as the season progresses. I know Boston Monday will let in fans for the first time. And I know other arenas are going to start opening up and we'll see how this goes here over the next few months. And we'll see about as Anthony mentioned, we'll see about the playoffs. Like, are they going to have 10,000, 5,000? Who are, you know, what's going to happen in the playoffs here? So I think the league has got to kind of figure out. I think they, first of all, like, the players got to start getting vaccinated. And I know they've got the incentive for them to get vaccinated now with the lift of restrictions. Like, you can actually have a guest in your room. I think that will help. But I also think that kind of states and cities are just fed up with the constraints and just like, let's just try this and see what happens, which I'm not sure is the best philosophy. But right now, I think that's what the NBA is going to do. They're going to start letting fans in.
Right. Gary, great stuff. Guys, before we go, just to make sure it has a rightful presence on the pod, in the course of us talking, as I'm sure you've seen on your phones, Elgin Baylor passed away, the Lakers legend, longtime Clippers executive, an absolutely iconic member of the NBA family, 86 years old. You know, so rest in peace to Elgin and certainly thoughts and prayers with his family. It's sad, guys, that, you know, you think about his legacy. And maybe I'm showing kind of my age in terms of, you know, where my awareness was. But, you know, I covered those Clippers teams that were owned by Donald Sterling. And so on the back end of that, you know, Elgin sued Donald for wrongful termination. pulled the curtain back, you know, kind of once a chapter was done for him on kind of Donald's sensibilities and the way that that franchise had been run. And there was a lot of value in that. But as a player, just an absolute monster, 11-time All-Star, and a guy who will sorely be missed. I didn't know Elgin. I came across him in, you know, Staples Center passings every once in a while, but certainly he will be missed.
Yeah, I covered the Clippers, my first NBA beat where he was a GM. And it was the late 90s. So it was, you know, it was a lot going on. I felt bad for Elgin because his managerial career kind of clouded. And then especially when he had Jerry West on the other, you know, on the other side of Inglewood, signing Shaq and drafting Kobe or trading for Kobe with Charlotte for Glady Divac. That's a great deal. So if you West on one side, and then you got literally, you know, Mike Oluwakandi and Danny Manning, who tears his knee up. Just a lot of bad luck for Elgin. And I felt bad that might have tainted his legacy a little bit, that it didn't work with the Clippers and then him having to sue Donald Sterling. It was funny, a quick Donald Sterling story. So he fired Bill Fitch in 1998. And I think Bill Fitch was 67 years old, something like that. So long career, you would think to retirement. So Sterling decided not to pay Fitch for the rest of his contract because Fitch didn't go try to find another job at like 68. So I just thought that's a term. I mean, if you want Sterling in a nutshell, like he literally had to force Fitch to get the, you know, sue to get his money for the rest of his contract because he didn't go find another job, you know, after Social Security, after retirement. So.
And you're right. I do remember those years, Gary, where it's like the kind of the undercurrent of Elgin's Clippers executive tenure was he would take a lot of the blame, and people would constantly ask, like, why can't they ever figure it out? I think it was 22 years he was there. And, you know, we were all way too slow and way too naive to kind of, you know, really highlight the way the franchise was being run. I mean, listen, 86 years old, that's a long, healthy life, but certainly, again, going to be missed. Guys, I appreciate it. By the time we visit next week, you know, I'm thinking at least a couple of these guys that we've talked about are going to be on the move. But Gary, stay safe, brother. Great to see you. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
You got it. Cool. Thanks, guys.